This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business. Hello, good evening and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg and it is a great privilege to be in your company tonight. We've got all the top stories, the stories that people are talking about, that Didata campus story, the one and only Si Jacobs giving us a thought on a sector on the JSE that is looking pretty cool. Big opportunities. It hasn't run with the rest of the JSE. And then we'll also have a look at Namibia's election, which was held today, and why Ford Asset Management thinks China is going to be hot in 2025. And remember, it's interactive, so please do join us when you can join us in the show by putting forward your comments in the program as we go forward. Okay, looking at the JSE today, the major moves there, only one of the major indices was firmer, that's resources, industrials, financials, and the top 40 index. Financials did worst by just over 1%, but the top 40 in industrial marginally lower. And resources were only kind of marginally higher, so nothing to write home about there. Bitcoin, that's a big bump. 3.36% jump today. Bitcoin, 94,799. Those of you who are following the BizNews portfolios, our exponential portfolio and our long-term portfolio, we've got Bitcoin in both of those. Purchased Bitcoin yesterday. Took the cash from the sale of MicroStrategy and the ProShares Bitcoin, which was not really reflective of the Bitcoin share price, Bitcoin price, because they pay a lot of dividends. But anyway, that went into the new Bitcoin Trust ETF, which reflects the value of Bitcoin, and I think that'll be looking a little better today. The Rand lost 12 cents against the pound. The pound's been really strong. I mentioned last night the reason for this is it is anticipated that the UK is going to do a lot better out of the Trump administration and its tariff wars than most countries in the world. And the Rand, we gained 3 cents against the US dollar. So interesting there, Rand up against the dollar, down 12 cents against the pound, which shows you how strong the pound has been. As far as market moving news of the day is concerned, Anglo American announced that it is going to be selling more Anglo Platinum. So what it's doing is it's kind of feeding these AmPlats into the market. It certainly is at the moment anyway. And its share price was up and Anglo Platinum's share price is down. That's not surprising because it means Anglo American's going to be getting cash. Anglo Platinum is, there are more shares available now to be sold. Data Tech was up 7.5% on an announcement of its share buyback program. And then Hyprop, the property company, on a pre-close operational update that the market liked, up 2.5%. The big loser today, Nampak, was down by 12.5%. This is a company that Andre de Ruyter, ex-Vescom, was once the CEO of. It really seems to be in a very sorry state. And the share price down 12.5% on a trading update ahead of its release of financial results at the end of September. And then Argent Industrial, one of Piet Viljoen's favorites, down nearly 4% on the interim results that it released today to the end of September. Datatech, no surprise to see that hitting a new high given the share buyback program that it announced. Brait up 4% to a new 12-month high of 2 rand and 9 cents. Pepkor up 3.33% after those excellent results yesterday. You might recall that it was up 4% yesterday, sitting at 26 rand 9 cents, and then Spar up 1.2% to 140 rand 78. Some long required respite there on the way down. Aspen down another 1.1%. It's hitting new lows or new 12-month lows consistently now, Aspen. Not sure if the RFK factor has got anything to do with that. There's an election at our neighbors in Namibia today. Only 4 million people in the whole of Namibia. But it's a very interesting election. SWAPO has been in power since 1990, and it now looks like it might lose its majority in Namibia. 62% of Namibians saying in a recent poll that they think the country's going in the wrong direction. Well, something that's going in the wrong direction is the Dimension Data executives. The full judgment from Justice Denise Fisher is on BizNews. Go and read it. As you'll hear from capitalist activist Rob Hersoff in a moment, he describes the 75 pages as like reading a crime novel. Let's get the update from Rob on the story that everyone's talking about.
You know, 2 days ago, I got sent this document by two friends of mine who said, this has just come out a day ago. You've got to read it. It's like a crime novel. And I've never really read a judgment before, but I started reading it, and it's, I don't know how many pages it is. It's 100 pages or so. 75. And it is a crime novel. I mean, I couldn't put it down. The fact that I do know a number of the people makes it even more pertinent and even sadder to read it. And, you know, why am I being asked about it? I'm not a lawyer. I'm a businessman. It's because I also then got a number of messages from friends of mine, including some prominent black buddies of mine who said, aha, Rob, you know, this is bad behavior by capitalists, by corporate chieftains, by people who've been held in such high regard. And there you are sort of saying capitalism works, capitalism is good, and these look like they're bad people. So, you know, it does look like they've done bad. It really does. It's not a good story to be reading about South Africa.
Give it to us in a nutshell. What happened?
So, assuming that the judgment is correct, which one, you know, Judge Fisher's done a very thorough job, it looks like the following has happened: that six prominent business people, all white, all known to many of us, and all highly respected, who, you know, some of whom have built Didata into one of the great success stories of South African technology and South African business, fabricated the acquisition of the Didata campus, which is in Johannesburg, in Bryanston, a data center, a golf club, and an art collection, which was part of the campus, at a ridiculously low price, where the company buying these four assets, and I think it ended up only being the campus and the art collection in the end, at this ridiculously low price of 1.4 billion rand, ejecting other potential buyers, including Patrice Motsepe's African Rainbow Capital, which is a real estate buyer, persuaded the Japanese that the buyers were a BEE group of mainly women. At least 51% of the buying group were BEE women. Not true. Buying at a ridiculously low price, where two members of the buying party were actually sitting on the board of the selling company advising them to sell and at what price to sell. So this is fraud, but it's a fraud of the most unsophisticated Keystone Cops variety. I mean, when you read it, you go, you know, these people are supposed to be sophisticated, you know, business people, and it's the most amateur fraud ever. I mean, most frauds are sophisticated. This is just done in a way that you think they know the rules. What the hell are they doing? And why it's an affront to me, and it's so sad because some of these people I really have liked, I really admired them and liked them. Why it's so sad to me is on a number of levels. You know, it's an abuse of BEE, and I've never been a fan of BEE, but it's a real abuse of BEE by six white corporate chieftains who've always been held in high regard. It's an affront to foreign direct investment. You know, Entity Docomo is one of the biggest companies in the world, and they've been ripped off. So this thing is just dreadful from a number of different angles. It's dreadful. It's dreadful for South Africa. It's dreadful for FDI. It's dreadful for BEE or anti-BEE. From a number of fronts, this really is an embarrassing, embarrassing story.
I notice you have purposefully not mentioned any names, and I presume that's because there could be an appeal. Perhaps the judge has got it wrong. It does happen.
Yes. Now, it'd be very interesting to see if there is an appeal. A good point there, Alec. If there is an appeal, you know, usually when people appeal, it's because they've been wronged by the judgment. You know, the judge got this wrong, Arlo has dropped the ball, or there's something missing in the story, we're appealing. And let's wait and see. If there is an appeal, you're going to have to wait for the appeal to go through. But this judgment is damning. It's damning, damning, damning. And the reason I haven't mentioned names, and the names are all in here, Jeremy Ord, Stephen Nathan, Grant Bodley, Saki Masiakros, Doc Watson, Jason Goodall. When I know all six of them, there's a reason I don't want to mention that. It saddens me to have read what has happened. Really does.
Rob, also to put in perspective, the company that they built, Dimension Data, was sold to NTT Docomo, a big Japanese firm. And the Japanese were presumably, from what I've read of the court judgment, relying on those executives who'd stayed on. So they sold the business to the Japanese and they continued working for them. And in this way, try to pull a fast one. So I guess the question is, the Japanese are also taking a very, very hard line. Part of the judgment, if I read correctly, said that those who were the protagonists, as Judge Fisher called them, were prepared to walk away from it, but the Japanese were not prepared to let them go. They want justice.
Yes, I think the will walk away from the deal, or we'll give the money back, or we'll make sure, you know, make sure everyone's whole, is the kind of, we're guilty, let us out of here, please. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's a big story. And you can read the crime novel, as Rob Herzog describes it, on BizNews. Well, onto something a lot lighter and more fun. I don't know if it's light. Investing's never really light, I suppose. But Sy Jacobs, the co-founder of 361, one of the top money managers in South Africa. Their record's impeccable. They're getting inflows into the company, he was telling us in the interview, while the rest of the big asset managers are talking about a fundamental decline in the inflows. There was a 100 billion rand outflow from 91, a 50 billion rand outflow from Coronation, for instance, in their recent results. But Sy, I asked him about the South African market in particular. He was very bullish on South Africa, and we've seen some incredible rises in share prices of South African stocks. But I asked him if there was any part of the market that might be still appealing or attractive for those who missed out on the run. Sy's full interview is our premiere tonight at 8 o'clock. The Rob Herzog full interview, and there's a lot more on what we were discussing there in those 7 minutes that we cut for you. That full interview is at 7 o'clock. Both of those premieres on BizNews TV. You can go along and watch them there. But for the moment, let's get a little eavesdropping in the conversation with Sy Jacobs of 361.
I think a lot of this two-pot withdrawal system has helped the credit books at this stage across the market, more so than the turnover. You know, it's a point in time of the year in November now where people are behind. They need to, facilitate their final school fee payment. They need to get their bank overdrafts maybe down a little bit so they're able to go on a holiday, et cetera, et cetera. So I think a lot of money is being fed into the credit system. So we're seeing a big improvement in retail books and banks books. And I think banks, particularly in our mind, look, particularly cheap. We're still getting a fantastic high single-digit dividend yield. You've got growth. The book's looking better. And we've got some big CapEx cycles coming up. If you look at the overall CapEx cycle in South Africa, there seems to be a big pickup. We've seen renewables. A lot of money has to be spent on water infrastructure. We're seeing a lot of money coming back into roads, other infrastructure. So overall, we are still pretty bullish South Africa. But again, some of that run has happened in the price, but we wouldn't be sellers. We would be more buyers than sellers currently.
When you mentioned banks, often people will stick with Capitec as the high growth bank and First Rand as the blue chip bank. But are there others? Would you look at Nedbank, Absa, even Standard Bank?
Well, I think Absa's been the forgotten basically stepchild of the commercial banks. In our mind, Absaluk's by far the cheapest. And we've spent a lot of time analyzing the banks, and we're actually very positive Absa at this point in the cycle, probably relative to the others. We also do own First Rand, and First Rand has been good, but has this overhang now with this credit motor issue in the UK, which I think until it's resolved may just be a small cloud over the First Rand business. And Capitec's very difficult to justify, always has been very difficult to justify. It's a phenomenal business, trades very much like Nubank, that came out of South America. And Berkshire Hathaway at one stage had a big stake in that, you know, this online fintech financial services business. So Capitec, as you know, you've had them on your stage many times, is not really viewed as a bank anymore, but rather as a fintech company. Can't really use the old metrics of price to book that you use in a normal bank, you know, because this is really an online bank. And it's difficult to justify the valuation, and we don't own much of it. We wouldn't be short it right now because it's just a forever darling of the market. But overall, the management team at Capitec have no doubt done the best job out of all the banks. But the valuation is captured in our view, you know, very much in that share price. And we tend to probably look at the cheapest of the banks, which is Absa at this point in the cycle.
Si, before we go, we have the National Health Insurance proposal in South Africa, which hasn't been taken off the table by any means. It could still see a huge battle in the government of national unity. But it has had an impact on Discovery's rating. Discovery being an international company to a large degree, yet the share price there being held back. When you look at South African champions, Discovery is certainly right up there as one of the champions of South Africa, particularly the way that it's operated globally. And I guess we could talk about Investec as well in a moment. But are you feeling the market is overemphasizing the danger of National Health on Discovery, given that it does have other ballasts now outside of the local operation?
Well, it's quite interesting you say that. I think, if anything, the market has discounted NHI not becoming a big thing, realized practically the government can't afford to implement it in the same way that they propose. We've heard rumblings that potentially, you know, private healthcare insurance providers will be able to exist in a parallel system. And we imagine that very much will be the case. Discovery, for example, is a business we never owned for 10 years, literally for 10 years. And I think the share price went nowhere in 10 years while we didn't own it. And we owned other insurance businesses. But this year, we stepped up, and it's in our top five this year and was there before the GNU. As we saw for the first time, the business starting to generate real cash. This new Discovery Bank growing much faster than anticipated. And insurance business is holding up better than we anticipated. And in fact, even the life business starting to look better. So it's, you know, Discovery was always going to have a very long life cycle because it never bought businesses in the industry. It created them from zero. So creating a business from zero obviously, you know, requires probably big losses in the beginning, big investment, massive cash outflow, and requires a very long life cycle. But eventually that life cycle matures and starts hopefully generating big profits. And we think that business, you know, tipped this year earlier. And that's why we've seen the stock closer to 110 Rand earlier in the year, and now closer to 195, and it's up maybe 70%. So it's been a phenomenal winner for 361 and for obviously country and Discovery, and I think that it's finally tipped over. And obviously, given all their technology, and given the fact that it's not a traditional healthcare insurance business and it's global, and it has some proper RP and health data embedded in its model, I think that, yeah, it could still surprise further to the upside. So we've been pretty bullish there, and I think we'll do well. And on Investec, I think the big plus in Investec's been a bank that's also turned the corner substantially, I think, since the old management left the business and new management came in. And I think what we've seen is a consolidation of that business model. I think costs have been taken out in a big way out of that business. Business has been realigned. Non-core things have been, put to the side. And the business has got some renewed vigor and done phenomenally well since then. So, yeah, I think it's difficult from this point because it has had a big run, but it has been very well managed over the last number of years.
Si Jacobs, one of the wise men that we tap from time to time. Another company that's done terribly well in the past few decades for those who've entrusted money to it is Ford Asset Management. It's not often that we play something out of a clip on a sponsored interview on this program, but this was just too good to miss. Today I spoke with Ford's portfolio manager, Rashad Tayorb, about the five predictions that the company is making for 2025. You'll be able to pick up that interview, the full interview, later on BizNews. But one that I asked him that gave me pause was China being one of the top performers in the world. Let's listen in. China will be one of the best performing markets in the world. There's a lot of cynicism at the moment about China and its stimulus package not being enough for that. China is actually falling off the radar. It's got a lot of fixing up to do before it gets back into a growth path. But you're looking at it differently.
So this is from Ishrit, another of our portfolio managers out in Singapore, and he actually predicted the same thing last year. So he's sticking to his guns. And in fact, a month or two ago, when China had moved to the top of the pile on the year-to-date returns, it looked like he was quite on point. But he still thinks that this recovery has legs. We've had many years of consolidation in China. The sentiment is at a low, and that's what leads you to these very attractive valuations for what we believe are world-class companies. And when you compare them to your options in the U.S., where for the world-class companies, for the leaders, you are paying extremely high multiples. In the EM space, if you want leaders in India, for example, you're paying very high multiples, whereas you can find that in China at very world-class companies at attractive valuations. We also think that the government has been through a process of consolidation. The property sector has the moves that have happened and the policies that have come in the property sector, they didn't come in last year. They've been in place since 2017, 2018. So that's already gone through a process of consolidation. And the monetary and fiscal stimulus in terms of delivering the turnaround, while maybe not of the quantum that people are clamoring for, we definitely think that it is sufficient and it will be sufficient to drive a recovery through. So if when you look at that combined with the attractive valuations, we think that we are at a low point in sentiment, and that's what's giving you the opportunity to buy into the Chinese market for 2025.
You've got a big advantage at Ford to have a team in Singapore. I guess that also gives you a better vision or better view on what's happening in the big giant just to the north of there. So those are interesting insights and need to be taken very seriously.
I think that's been critical, because if you look at the effective Cold War that's happening between the China and the West, the reliability of information that you get coming from Western media outlets, even outlets like The Economist, like the Financial Times, you can see the shift in coverage and the way they're covering issues related to BRICS, related to Russia, related to China. It's coming from a very Western perspective of what's going on, and they've almost picked a side and they've lost some of their objectivity. So when we've got a number of Mandarin speakers, Chinese, we've got people from all over the world in our Singapore office, but we are right on the doorstep of China, and we've got a number of Mandarin speakers in the team who've got family in China, and they understand it. They travel there regularly and they understand it from the ground up. And I think if you speak to anyone who's been to China in the last year or two, we had our trip to China for clients earlier this year. They were you, and I've spoken to people who've been there in the last few months, anyone who's been there is actually just blown away. The gap between what the media's perception is and what you see on the ground is just massive.
Well, that was reaffirmed by David Bacher from Corian, who went to China recently as well and came back raving. Closer to home, Namibia went to the polls today. It's hotly contested, and there's thoughts that the ruling party, just like the ANC, with around 65% going into this vote, may lose its majority, or at least is in deep danger of doing so. Our partners at Bloomberg provide context on the election. Let's listen in as they talk to Ntando Tukwana, one of the Bloomberg team in Johannesburg.
Voters in Namibia head to the polls today to pick their next president and parliament. It has been billed as the most hotly contested vote since independence in 1990. The incumbent ruling party, SWAPO, has dominated politics for the past 35 years, but is now facing strong opposition as public support weakens. Let's get more from our economy and government reporter in Johannesburg, Ntando Tukwana. Ntando, good to have you with us. Just walk us through why this election is so hotly contested. What are the factors contributing?
Morning, Jimena. So Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah is really in a tight race to keep a party, the SWAPO, in power. But this is looking like it's going to be an election that's going to deliver a moment of reckoning for them, with the party's support expected to fall from the 65% it achieved in the 2019 election. And that's largely because of the fact that voters are dissatisfied by the high levels of corruption, the high levels of unemployment and inequality. And on the other hand, you're actually seeing the Independent Patriots for Change. It's a new party contested in the election for the first time in 2019 and actually took a huge chunk from SWAPO and managed to get 29% of the vote. And those are some of the issues that are going to deem this a very, very tight election this year.
And the leader of the opposition is a lady. It would be the first time that they will have a lady leader in case the opposition do win. Let me just ask you a question about the economy. What type of economy will the next leader inherit? What are the problems they're going to be facing?
I mean, aside from the structural issues of high unemployment and weak economic growth, the next leader is about to inherit a country that is about to experience a boom in its oil and gas industry. Namibia is actually fast becoming a hotspot for gas explorations, and companies like Total Energies and Shell have really been making these huge discoveries. There have been a lot of discoveries along the Orange Basin and a lot more expected in other areas. So people will be looking out for that. But this also raises the concern about how the Namibian government will be able to manage this boom. There has been criticism that it's not been able to really manage its other minerals like diamonds and uranium. And for a country that's the third or the fourth largest uranium producer, people have said that it's quite problematic that the broader economy has not really benefited from that.
Those are our partners at Bloomberg. Well, don't forget that later this evening, 7 o'clock, you can get the premiere with Rob Hersoff on the Dimension Data Campus matter. And then at 8 o'clock is the full in-depth interview with Cy Jacobs of 361. So what did I learn today? Well, you don't know what you don't know, and that came through very clearly. But something else that I think is well worth just taking account of, Namibia is booming because it has got gas finds off its coast, primarily in the Orange River Basin. Who's on the other side of the Orange River? Good old RSA. Who's been prospecting on the other side of the Orange River? Pretty much nobody, because our lawmakers have got our laws a little bit messed up. Let's hope that we can see a change there, and the great promise of gas deposits and gas finds in South Africa will be able to be brought to fruition in the same way as whoever the new leader of Namibia is will be thanking their lucky stars that when the big boss allocated mineral resources around the world, he gave them a nice bite as well. I'm Eric Hogg. It's been my pleasure from our team of technical producer, Ruani Rasmus, executive producer, Lucy Ferreira, and the whole team at BizNews until tomorrow at 6 p.m. Cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.